She's All That.
This is the She's All That video podcast, conversations with women doing awesome shit. I'm your host, September Smith. And in this season, it's all about the transformation that women are making in the aftermath of the midlife bomb, as I call it. Those unforeseen events, illness, loss, a career termination, a battle, an awakening, a transformation. Events that are lobbed into our lives like a grenade, detonating the life that we've been living for decades and making it impossible to ever go back. When this happens, we are left to dust ourselves off, figure it out, and find our own way forward. While the lens of popular culture is often on the tragedy and the trauma and the injury and damage that it inflicts, I want to celebrate women who were only made stronger by what they experienced. We need to hear those stories to know that building that new life, that new incarnation, from the pieces of what was, is not just possible, it may be the best thing you'll ever do.
She's All That.
My guest today is Linda Murray Bullard. She is the CEO of LSMB Business Solutions, and I met Linda via LinkedIn back in August of this year. We have common connections, and there was a thread, a very impactful thread, women talking about business, women over 45 starting their business. And I noticed a couple of Linda's comments, and I thought, who is this woman? So I checked her out, checked out her profile, and I saw that she works with women over 45 starting and building their businesses, but also that she is a specialist in working with economically disadvantaged women-owned small businesses. I actually had to go look up that acronym. And I thought, okay, I want to talk to this woman. So we connected and I booked an appointment for September 27th, weeks out. September 27th came, the time came, and I jumped on the Zoom call. Minutes tick by. Linda didn't show up, which, I don't know, something felt funny about that. Because I knew she was a woman of integrity, a woman of her word, just from the little bit I'd interacted with her. So after about 10 minutes, I jumped off, got back to my business, and I dropped her a note saying, hey, Linda, obviously something came up. Hope everything's well with you. Well, on September 27th, things weren't going so well for Linda. Things weren't well at all. Linda, what was happening in your world on September 27th?
So actually, backing up to September 23rd, I was admitted in the hospital. I died due to COVID. I crashed. And they had to revive me. So when we were scheduled to meet, I was actually in a coma.
You were in an induced coma?
Yes, for 17 days.
Oh, my Lord. Now, look, yeah, I had a feeling things weren't as they should be, but I had zero idea. It wasn't until almost 4 weeks later I got a message from you saying, I'm so sorry I missed our call. Tell me a little bit about, I had no idea that they induced comas in people. What was your experience? What was happening?
Yeah, so at the time, I was totally out of it. I was on a ventilator and had a feeding tube. And for 17 days, the ventilator was breathing for me because I was unable to breathe for myself. COVID had pretty much suffocated me. And so I was stroking. My body was reacting to not being able to function normally. And so they put me in a coma. I started to have stroke symptoms, and it was just to give my body time to rest so it could get through the worst part of the attack and start going toward healing.
Wow. I have no personal experience with this. I had no idea that they would put you into a coma. I'm assuming that this is to kind of counteract the effects of the COVID. You had Delta variant.
I did have the Delta variant.
You actually had, in hindsight, it's thought that both you and your son had the original variant of COVID much earlier than any of us knew COVID was in North America.
Right. We had the symptoms of the first variant of COVID in November of 19. My son is a first responder. And so, at the time we were living together, and he got sick. And then once he got well, I got sick. And it was very much the symptoms of COVID, the fatigue, the aches, the fever. Like we had all the things of COVID, but we both thought it was like a sinus infection. It was a changing of the season or something like that he had picked up in his job. And we got through that fine. I had the brain fog and all the other things that go with COVID.
But nobody knew then. Nobody knew like those symptoms would have meant nothing to you, because it wasn't until March and April that we really, as a continent, started understanding what this was and what the symptoms were.
Exactly. And so we pretty much got through that part. And then I went a year and a half kind of semi-quarantining myself, mm-hmm. like only seeing customers online for the most part. But my boyfriend and I decided to open a co-work space.
Ooh, okay.
And so at the time that I got stricken, I was trying to bring up two businesses. We have an Airbnb we're trying to bring up, and then we had the co-work space. And so we were just busy doing what we do. And thinking I was social distancing, you know, wearing the mask or whatever, wasn't vaccinated. It wasn't that I wasn't going to get vaccinated. It's because I have experience with clinical trials. I was waiting for them to work any quirks that they saw in it out before I got it.
A lot of people aren't doing that.
Yeah, so I was kind of prolonging it. Never did it occur to me that I wouldn't get it. It was just a point of when. And I thought I had time. And then I got sick. I on the 21st of September, I went and got tested. We both were ill, but I started to get progressively worse. And so I went and got tested. And then on the 23rd, I got the results that it was COVID positive. And I called my doctor and she said, get to the emergency room now. And so I did exactly as she said. And within minutes of getting to the emergency room, I crashed.
What does that mean?
I died. They had to resuscitate me and keep me alive.
Everything was going into failure.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt tired and I had a fever, but I didn't feel like it's time for me to die. I mean, I didn't feel like that was the end. I just felt like I was having difficulty breathing and I was tired, and because my O2 stats was probably very low, but I didn't know that. And so I remember going, checking in, giving him my ID and following on the young man. He said, follow me to a room. That's the last I remember. For 17 days.
Yeah. Now, when we first talked, you said that after those 17 days, when you emerged from that coma, you had people, nurses, technicians coming to you and expressing to you how happy they were that you survived. Because in that month in Tennessee, 1,790 did not survive. 1,527 were unvaccinated. And they really thought that you were going to be one of that number.
They did. Person after person who were on the crash team who helped save my life came in and said, hey, my name is, one of them's name was Kathy. And she said, I was the one that had all the white on, like the Stay Puft Man. That was me in the crash room with you. I don't remember her. I vaguely remember the doctor, looking up and seeing the doctor over my head, but I don't remember anything else about that time. And so various people like Kathy were coming in and saying, hey, I was there. We were worried about you. We thought we lost you. We're so glad you're still here. Like the respiratory therapist who sat with me 2 days while I was on the ventilator. He said, you know, I was here checking to make sure the ventilator was doing what it was supposed to do. He said it was working fine, but Miss Linda, you did not look well at all. And I really thought we were going to lose you.
And you also told me that most people in your age group.
Yeah.
You were one of the only ones that survived.
I was the first one. I was the first survivor of 60, of the 60 age group. I was the first survivor of, they said, well, now you have a title. Because, you know, they call me the business plug. That's my title in the business world. But then they gave me a new title. The first person to survive COVID after coming off a ventilator for my age group.
Oh my God. So there's a couple of things I want to ask you about that. So you, like so many people, like myself, I'm vaccinated, but I have my thoughts as well. I was like, oh, what do we know about this? But I did it. So you were, as they call it, would you say that you were vaccine hesitant?
I was, yeah, definitely hesitant, but not against it.
Yeah,
not
just like
not totally against it. But I was trying to figure out Well, I was trying to give them time to figure out what were the pros and cons.
Yeah.
You know, so that I could see where I fit in all of that.
Yeah.
At the same time, so I have asthma, I have high blood pressure, and I have diabetes type 2. So I have those illnesses. And of the four illnesses, they said that the Delta variant was attacking, I had three of the four. Like, I didn't have COPD. Mm. That's the only one I didn't have.
Wow.
And so I knew that I would be getting it. It was just a matter of when.
You'd be getting the vaccine. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, when we first talked, you had said that there is a vast difference when, like, we all have a little bit of hesitancy. Nobody wakes up in the morning going, I want a new medicine in my body, but whatever. We all have the time it takes to wrap our heads around it or not. There is a huge gaping gap in your state between, when we first talked, you said between the affluent community, the numbers of vaccinations there versus, do you compare that to communities of color?
Right. The news report that I saw said in one of the affluent areas of the city that 85% of them were vaccinated versus a community mostly of people of color. And it had a 14% vaccination rate at that point. Yes. 14%. Yeah.
So a huge 70% difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What's happening there?
And so, I wanted to be a part of the solution, and I held a show on Sunday. This past Sunday, to help people understand the impact of the disease. Because a lot of times, like, they may be like me, you know, thinking that it's about my freedoms or my liberties are being exhausted or something's in there that is going to help them track me or whatever the thought pattern is for people being hesitant. I wanted to show them the impact of what the disease can do, because I didn't consider my children when I was making my decision. Like, what is the impact of those? Have we taught the people who love us how to live without us? Because COVID is deadly. I'm a witness that it was deadly because it killed me.
Yeah, they were just able to bring you back. Oh my God.
Absolutely.
Have we taught those that love us how to live without us?
Yeah.
So we're all kind of just hearing the sound bites of my rights, my freedoms, but we're not thinking of these wider ramifications. Like, and it goes way beyond, like you said, and you personally know what it is to lose a mother figure.
Absolutely. I lost my mother at 9.
So now, having had COVID, you're thinking of that in terms of, I don't want my children, my family to experience.
I wouldn't want that on anybody. I losing her so early in life is there's no way to put all the words together to describe what that's really like. And when I thought about it, you know, and it wasn't until I had been through the coma, woke up, and my son, my oldest son, my children are 47, 37, and 32, so they're grown. But when I heard my oldest son say, Mama, are you going to be all right? It wrung my heart, because I, at that point, realized I almost killed his mother. I almost left my child motherless, which I wouldn't wish that on anyone. And I think when we have grown children, we tend to think that they're self-sufficient and that they're on an island and they can cope it. We hope and pray we've, you know, given them, equipped them with enough tools that they can do the rest of their lives by themselves. But in all actuality, our children will never be the age we are. And so they still need our wisdom. They still need our guidance, even when they're 47, you know, they still need us.
Yeah.
And so my negligence my hesitance almost cost him his mother.
Yeah. So there's the whole widening the thought of, like, yeah, it's your rights and your freedoms, but it's like, it's the ramifications of what you're taking away from your family and the impacts that you're having both personally. And you know that as an independent businesswoman yourself, what did this cost you?
So when you think about finances, right? This happened in September, and I was working on a bunch of projects and things, but I hadn't been paid since August. So financially, that was that. Then the cost of the bill itself. And then
roughly, what is, Edna, for people, listeners who aren't America, and because most OECD, all OECD countries other than America have universal health care.
Okay.
We don't know what this is. What was the cost? What was the bill for that?
So the numbers are still being added. The numbers are still being added, but the initial hospital bill itself was over $211,000. Like that was just for the room and board and the hospital care.
Not the doctors, not the nurses, not the technicians, not the tests, just the hospital.
Right. That's not labs and x-rays. That's not doctor visits. Like those things will be added to that charge. And so, and then I'm in physical therapy, you know, then I had speech pathology. I had a bunch of other ancillary that went along with that. So that's not included in that bill. So
we're probably north of $250,000.
Absolutely.
A financial hit to you.
Absolutely. Because meds and all the things that I have to have because of COVID sends your body into shock. And everything, like my numbers are off the chart for my blood pressure. My numbers are off the chart for my sugar diabetes, like the test, the glucose. It's astounding. I am having to monitor myself day and night to make sure that my blood pressure doesn't get too high, that my heart rate stays at an even keel, that my blood sugars are under check. Like the impact of COVID, like you can hear a rumble in my voice because I still have that lining of phlegm attached to my lungs. Every now and then I have to work that out, you know.
So it's affected your lungs. It's affected your brain. It's affected your heart.
Yes.
It's inflamed your entire body. Diabetes. You were telling me that you tried to walk up 15 stairs and...
Oh, and I couldn't get my heart rate back down. I couldn't get my blood pressure down.
You were an active, busy woman doing all kinds of things before.
Absolutely. Riding bikes. Like my favorite thing to do is to go bike riding. I live downtown, and to go bike riding on Sundays when no one's downtown. Like that's one of my favorite things to do. I can't do that right now. Like I sing in the choir in my church. I can't do that right now because I can't hold a note.
So but, we are almost 2 full months since this. Like almost to the day, almost 2 full months since you got sick.
It's going to be a year. Like the outlook is.
Is that what they've told you? It's going to be a year?
The people who have been through it have told me that I'll be regaining parts of my body back as late as a year from now.
And meanwhile, like there's the impact to your physical and how that affects your life. But as you said, you hadn't been paid since August.
Yeah.
What's this doing to your business and your ability to be supporting yourself?
As blessings come, right? So the day that I was admitted, the day before I was admitted in the hospital, I got my EDIL from the Small Business Administration, which is a loan. And part of it's forgivable, part of it's not, but it's a loan to help you sustain your business.
Through COVID?
Through COVID, and it came ideally right on time.
Ideally because, and ironically.
Exactly. But as blessings come, but because of that, my business was able to continue on. Like I have set my business up to build automatic. Automation is very important when you're a business owner. And so my business pretty much operated by itself.
And that's what you do for other people. So that's exactly. Your whole background. And thank God
this
you
is
for
why
you.
You need to do it.
Yes.
It's because if something should happen to you, God forbid, your business can continue on without stopping. Everything I had in automation was running. All the ads were running. All the bills were being paid. Like things was still happening for the business. So it didn't feel the hit that I was feeling.
So yeah. you had said to me, you want to make sure people like yourself, like women, independent business owners, this is not something to play around with.
It's not. It's really not, because what happens is, and especially if you're self-employed, right? When you're not working, you're not making money. Like, even if you have contracts or whatever, when you can't fulfill the contract, when you can't do what your genius put it in the world, then your business takes a hit, you take a hit, and then your income, like, I live off my business. It's how I get paid. And so being able to manage all of that and being able to, my clients who I was working with, you know, I was working on business plans with people and doing different things with them. And they thought I just went ghost. They were like, you know, Miss Linda gone. We hadn't heard from her in weeks, you know, because I follow up with my clients. How are you doing? How are things going? You know, what can I do to help you? And I, none of that was happening. The people who missed me most were the Facebook people. So I have like 25,000 people around the world that follow me on various social media platforms. But the Facebook people were like in my inbox saying, hey, Miss Linda, I'm praying for you. Hey, Miss Linda, what's going on? Because for every day since March 4th of 2013, I have posted something to encourage somebody. Every day, I make it my point. And during this time when I was not there, people were in my inbox saying, hey, what's going on with you? Hadn't heard from you in a few days because it was unusual.
Yeah.
I woke up to 275 voice messages and countless inbox messages and 7,400 emails from various places of people checking in on me, trying to see, you know, what's going on with you? You haven't been on, I miss you. And so you really understand your impact.
Yeah, yeah. And the impact that this is going to have on you. And if you're out of the game, and this has had you now pretty much sidelined for 2 full months, as you say, it's going to be over the next year.
Yeah.
You're going to be coming back to normal.
Yeah.
When I hear people say like, oh, it's only 1%. It's only 1% who died. First of all, that's an enormous number. I don't think we should be just like poo-pooing that. But it's not just that, you know, living or dying. It's what it robs you of and for the months. And
absolutely. And that's the thing they don't tell you about. Nobody's publicizing that if you get COVID, you may need a lung replacement or a heart replacement or a kidney transplant or psychological evaluations.
Or you'll have brain fog for months and months and months to come.
Absolutely.
And you won't be able to work or live in the world the way you're used to doing it.
When I woke up, I couldn't move anything. So, but my head, like I couldn't speak. They were getting ready to put another feeding tube in me. And I didn't want that. And so I was, you know, shaking my head. No, because I couldn't say no. And so I would shake my head. No. And she was like, well, are you saying no? You hear what I'm saying? Or are you saying no, you don't want it? You know, because they were getting ready to put another tube in me.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't want it. But I couldn't tell her I didn't want it.
Yeah.
And so when you are under the influence of COVID, people are making decisions for you that you can't make for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are talking about your freedom and your liberties, you want to be able to make the decisions that you feel are best for you.
Yeah.
You can't do that if you're in a coma.
Now, you had said something around, you know, the hesitancies from fear and doubt and, okay, I want to wait. But what is your opinion now on something to the effect of you just have to do it?
You just have to do it, right. And so what was brought back to my remembrance was when I was about 4, they made a mandate for MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella. And you had to take the sugar cube, you had to get the shot. On my left shoulder, I still have the scar from that shot because my mother had an 8th grade education, but she understood that if she took her children to get the vaccinations, that God would do the rest in taking care of them. And so sometimes I think we know too much. My hesitance comes because I knew the manager of a research department and I would learn different things from her. Sometimes not knowing is better than knowing if it's going to prevent us from doing what we need to do in order to stay healthy. We don't know what's in the food when we buy food at restaurants.
Absolutely.
We don't know what's in the food when we buy food at the store.
Yes.
At the store.
Yeah.
Like we are all, there are so many things that we don't really know what's in it that we ingest. And for us to do that about the vaccination, it just shows how out of sync, how powerful we think we are, but we really aren't.
Yeah.
Like if you ever ate out, if you ever open up a bottle of soda, like if you ever opened anything that you didn't plant, you know, harvest yourself, you don't know what's in it. You don't know what went on it. And so while it sounds good to like, we don't know what's in the vaccination, but we don't know what's in none of it. I mean, the reality of it is.
It's been politicized, and that's a soundbite that's out there. We don't know what's in it, so you're not that careful about most other things in your life, so why be so?
But you don't really realize it because you're doing it autopilot, right?
Okay,
you go to the store, you buy a product.
So why is this, you know, we don't know what's in it? yet there's 85-86% of the affluent population of Tennessee is vaccinated.
Right.
So why are they so unworried about what's in it? And they're also the ones that only 15% of the vaccinated are the ones that are dying. The 85 are the ones that aren't.
Right.
So why is it so easy for them to know that it's like, this is just something we're going to have to take a risk on and just do it?
Because in research, in clinical research, most times they're not used as the guinea pigs. And so, you know, the people of lower income, of color, and the research is there. So I get that. But here's the deal. You can go anywhere in your city and get a vaccination. Like, you don't have to go to your neighborhood pharmacy. You can go to a pharmacy in an affluent neighborhood.
So like, what you're referring to is like some infamous research and experiments that have been done in the past that have victimized the Tuskegee experiments.
Well, that's one. And then they talk about the mercury in the shots, the MMR shots that were given to community health centers.
Yeah. So, you know? So there is a history. There is a history.
Yeah, that's a history
of abuse. Yeah.
Right. But you can go and get the COVID vaccination anywhere. Like, you're not limited to just your neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
So go get it in an affluent area.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if that's your concern. It's just that, just trying to demystify why people aren't getting what's going to protect them, and not just protect them. As I told you before, you know, these are people dying. This is our knowledge base dying, our elders, and, you know, people, your dreams, people who have dreams and ambitions they've yet to fulfill, like, their ideas are dying. Like, we're losing out as a community, not just as the family that's missing this person, but the community are missing the wealth of that person in knowledge.
And this has been borne out historically, as we were talking earlier, like, when you look at the decimation of Indigenous populations in, like, I think of my home province of British Columbia, the epidemics that they were unable to protect themselves, that they're vulnerable to, decimated their populations. Yes. It killed their elders, it killed mothers, it killed fathers, it killed the community was in tatters. And 3, 4, 5 generations later, 100 years later, they have not regained what they've lost. And the disadvantage to a community of being vulnerable to an epidemic like this.
Absolutely.
Ramifications are going to be generations out on this if people aren't protecting themselves. So you are trying to make a change with this.
I am trying. Absolutely. I am trying to use my experience with COVID to educate people on what the impact of COVID is. Because another thing I did in my program I had Sunday is I had an attorney to come on and talk about the directives. Because most of us don't have conversations with our kids about, if I'm incapacitated, what does that mean to you? What do you need to know in order for you to carry on, or for you to handle my assets as I want them to be handled? And so she talked about, you know, we assume that if we die, things are just going to go, people are going to handle, things will happen as they should. But there are actually laws in different states that govern what's happening next. And she was talking about, like, probate, it could last up a year. Like, your assets could be out there for a year with, you know, nobody taking care of them. It's just so much. She was saying that everyone over 18 need to have a directive of what happens to them next if they're incapacitated.
Now, that's like a will.
That's like a directive, more or less. So not necessarily a will, but just telling people, this is what I have and this is what I want to happen to it. Mm. And so a will it much, but basically like your power of attorney. Mm. So if I get sick, who's going to handle it for me?
Right.
Your financial agreement, which is, this person can make financial decisions for me in the event that I'm not able to do it for myself.
So you're educating your community. You're also encouraging people to bite the bullet. You actually got vaccinated.
Yes.
On that live stream on the 15th. On Sunday.
Yeah. So I got vaccinated the 15th. Because what happens is when they put steroids and antibiotics to treat, I had bacterial pneumonia, which is a side effect of COVID. And because they had to put me on high doses of antibiotics and steroids, I wasn't able to get vaccinated until 30 days after I stopped the last treatment. Mm-hmm. And so my last treatment of antibiotics and steroids was October 14th.
So right over the threshold of that 1 month.
November 15th,
on a live stream, you got vaccinated. Oh, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Because I want to be the example. And because I did that, a couple of people went and got their booster, and one young lady went and got her vaccination, her first one. And then I have a friend who she had went through COVID, and it didn't really mess with her physical body, but it messed with her mind. And so you don't know, like I've had people talk about the joint pain, like if they've had breaks and whatever, that is making those things worse. Like you don't really know what is going to attack. But of that 98, the 79, what is it, 97, 98, 99% you say that survive, they have the impact of COVID after they have had the disease, because COVID hangs around.
You didn't die, but you will be living with this for potentially years to come. We don't even know how long these effects are going to last.
Exactly, exactly. And so for that reason, you need to think about, you know, you don't even know, like a lot of people don't know what illnesses they have underlying illnesses because they haven't manifested themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with COVID, you are going to find out. Let me just tell you. It will magnify.
I have had that conversation with people who are vaccine hesitant, or, you know, they're saying, yeah, but all the people who died had comorbidities and or underlying health issues. You don't know what you've got. We, none of us, particularly, you know, the further through your life you go, it hasn't manifested itself, as you say, but we don't know. So you can't be smugly to saying, well, I'll be fine.
I'm healthy. I'm healthy. I eat right. I exercise. I'm not obese.
You have no idea.
But the thing about it is the reality of it is the Delta variant is taking out the healthy and the unhealthy.
Yes.
So it's not just taking out obese people. There are people who had no record of any medical illnesses that have died.
Yep.
So it's a Russian roulette.
Yeah. And you know, we would never do this with any other situation prior to COVID. I don't know that anybody would be fine. It's like, one out of 100 people are going to die. Oh, okay. That's a risk I'm willing to take.
What? So you can be the 100. You're the one, you know, you don't know if you're the one, or if your mom's the one, or your kids are the one. Yeah. Like you don't know.
The whole kid thing, I worry about that as well, because we don't really have the longitudinal research and study to know, like, how is this going to affect their development if they get this?
I know.
Like, if they get a milder version, but is it going to be mental, cognitive, physical?
I have a whole another source of moles, like skin tags, that grew under my arms.
Because of COVID?
Yeah, I didn't have it before COVID.
Ooh.
I know, right? And so not being able to lift my arms for weeks and weeks and weeks, I knew there was something happening under there, but I didn't know what it was. And then when I've been to physical therapy to help unfreeze my shoulders, because my shoulders froze while I was laying there. But in lifting my arm up, I could see that there are skin tags that I didn't have before.
So do you know what it occurs to me? People are afraid of, like, what are the effects of the vaccine? I'd be afraid of what are the effects of, you know, like, if you do in fact survive, all this other weird stuff is manifesting itself in you, and who knows what's going to come up next year or the year after.
Exactly.
Afraid of that.
Exactly.
So what are you going to do? Your business until this event hit your life was working with small businesses, economically disadvantaged women owned small businesses, women over 45. And as you say, it was all automated. Thank God for that, because yours kept going and you help people do that. But you're pivoting a bit now with this new mission you've got. After the live on Sunday, what do you plan going forward that's going to help try to get more than 15%?
So for the most part,
vaccinated.
Yeah. So for me, my whole thing is I'm spiritually led. Like, I help people do business plans and plan out their grant proposals and all this planning. But for myself, I actually get downloads. And so it says, go do this. And I go do that. Like the whole program on Sunday, I was instructed while I was laying there unable to move that you need to tell other people what you're going through. And so that's where that whole program came out. I do know that a book is coming out of this. It's one of the things that I'm doing. I haven't started on it, but I know it's in my future. But just educating people and talking, going to different platforms with other women 45 and over, and just telling the story so that they understand what the impact is of their hesitance. Like, just educating as many people as I can on it. And then from a business perspective, educating as many self-employed business owners who may not have already thought about, if I'm incapacitated, what does that look like? And what conversations do I need to start having now? And just really sharing the experience that I've gleaned from this whole experience.
Yeah. Wow. I'm so inspired with what you are looking to do. And the whole theme of season three is the women who have had some huge event impact their life and the new direction that it takes them in. I'm so excited and inspired with where you're going with your experience, Linda. And I would like to mention, when you said that there's a book coming out of this, Linda does not speak lightly about this. Linda is an author of a book that has been accepted into the Congress, the Library of Congress, back in 2013.
Yeah.
What was the name of that book?
The Well Ran Dry Memoirs of a Motherless Child. And it talks about me losing my mother to the Hong Kong flu on Christmas Day, 1968.
There's definitely an ironic full circle on that.
It is. It absolutely is. I did a documentary last year in 2020 about the similarities between COVID and the Hong Kong flu.
Well, I'm so glad your children did not lose their mother, Linda.
Absolutely.
And I'm so honored and grateful that you were here to talk with me today about your experience and what you're doing with it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
God bless.
This amazing conversation is one woman's efforts to use podcast guest appearances to get her very important message out to the world. Whether it's to build her business, her audience, her credibility, or even rebuild her life, these women know that co-creating amazing interview recordings on other people's podcasts that will be promoted and broadcast from all of the major podcast platforms for years to come is a smart way to be building their brand and getting their message out. Whether it's to grow your speaking career, to get more widely known, or to better position yourself as the authority you really are, strategic podcast guesting is a savvy move. We can help you figure out your best strategy and get you rapidly and effectively launched, leveraging this powerful medium. Contact us at September@ofcoursepro.com or book a complimentary consultation call. The links are in the notes of this podcast. Join the ranks of people making podcast guesting really work for them. Let's get you started.
She's over.